Hi, my name's Eric Lyle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, September 18th, 1985, and my home group is the Marble Group, meets on Friday nights at 7:30. You know, I have a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor in AA. I'm on about my fourth one at this point. The other three moved out of town. And I've never been without a sponsor. For me, it's been vital, especially early on in my sobriety, but often, more often than not, even in the last 10, 15 years, when life kind of got my way and I needed to sit down and talk about some stuff, you know. It's been a blessing to have been sponsored through the steps. Last week we talked about four and my experience with that, and you know, you can't help but talk about that and kind of briefly talk about five because they're so joined. And the way I was sponsored through these things, you know, I did my fourth, and then I did my fifth at a retreat with my sponsor, and I'm going to get into that, what the book suggests we do. And I went down in the chapel after my fifth step and reviewed the first five, and you know, meditated on where I was at with that as best I could at that point in my sobriety, meditate about it. And then I reread six and seven, and I took them that day. And a question may come up, it may not, but that's how I sponsor guys today. We do this all one day, and it was funny, and not so funny now because this young man's dead. But a guy I sponsored, we got done with his fifth step, and that's always kind of an emotional thing, you know, both for the person that's doing their fifth step and the sponsor. And you know, we got to talking about it afterwards, and you know, we read the text through the end of seven. And I was taking him back down to the mission, and he says, I said, so you should probably just go to the chapel. That's a beautiful place to do this. You got one right there. And he says, well, I'm going to watch the Cavs game first, and then I'll do it. And I says, no, that's not what you're going to do. Because you can do this and catch the second half of the game, because LeBron James isn't going to come and 12-step your ass if you take a drink, man. I guarantee it. You know, and that's the truth, man. You know, and he did it, and he called me, and he got to watch the second half of the Cavs. You know, unfortunately, he stopped doing what the steps suggest, 10, 11, and 12, and he got loaded, and he died. And, you know, that happens. That's not always the outcome, but it happened to him. And when you sponsor, say, you know, I've had a couple guys die, and it just kind of tears a little bit of your heart out, you know, but I know that's part of the deal, and I learned that early on. In any event, I'm going to read a little bit more out of the book tonight than I have in previous weeks, just because there's some things I want to touch base on here. So on 72 in the action, you know, the question is asked, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part. Once again, you know, it's asking us to do something. Which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough at admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. I did that constantly when I was getting loaded. And the ledger always came out balanced in the black in my mind, because everything I was doing was okay. You know, that self-appraisal at the level that we require to stay sober, I was incapable of doing when I was getting loaded, when I was drinking. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We may be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when they see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. That's a pretty strong statement, in my mind, and in my experience. You know, there was one or two things in my inventory that I had never told another human being. And my sponsor was a big, kind of gruff Italian dude, but he's also a loving guy at heart. And he walked me through this that day, and these couple things. He says, listen, you're not going to tell me anything that I'm going to judge you on. Because if I haven't done it, given the right set of circumstances, I probably would have. And so that gave me a little bit of a sense of ease. So I sat down with my sponsor, and I, you know, I had my four step, and we had been reviewing it as I was writing it, you know, and he says, you know what we're going to, before we even start, he says, you know what the important thing is out of this? The column on the left and the column on the right. Because you're going to need to know whom and what that are going to go on your eight-step list. And you need to know what the root cause is to again ask your God of your understanding, your higher power, to remove this. I mean, I needed to know what the problem was. And the problem wasn't my wife and my parents and my employer and Ronald Reagan. I mean, I pointed my finger at everything when I was drinking. You know, I got a lousy job because Ronald Reagan's the president. No, I got a lousy job because I was a drunk and didn't get an education. That was the facts, you know. So we looked at the stuff, you know, and what became clearly evident was that I was fearful and selfish. Those are the two things on my inventory. I had a few resentments, and I was dishonest whenever I had a chance to be, okay? But what really drove all my thoughts when I was drinking was fear, on some level, or manifestations of fear. So I went through this inventory with my sponsor, and to me, I thought these things were pretty dark, and some of them were, but most of it is just that usual stuff we do, those people we harm, you know, family and friends and employers, when we go about drinking the way we drink. And, you know, at the end of this whole thing, we went through that column on the right. And we talked about these things. I mean, there was things he walked me through in this. He dug a little bit deeper what I had in that second column. You know, he asked some questions. And I asked those same questions today. And we, when we got all through of it, in the sexual inventory, and a couple harms I'd done to other people that weren't further up on the... in my resentments and fears, you know, he came back to a couple things that he thought potentially could be there, and I didn't want to disclose them. And they weren't the case. And afterwards, I asked him why he asked me that. He said, because in my experience, these couple things are things that guys especially will have a hard time admitting, you know, and they were sexual things. And, I says, no, that's not the case, but I, you know, I felt comfortable enough with the dude that I would have told him had that been the case, you know. And, you know, as I've sponsored over the years, I get a pretty good feel for guys, you know, and I know when I need to ask these questions, when I don't. I mean, I don't know at all, but you get a good feel for guys. And, you know, the times that they have looked at me and said, yeah, you know, I says, you know what? You're not any different than any of, you know, we all have this stuff. And, you know, what you just told me certainly could have been me. I would have done anything to get a drink or anything else that I was into. You know, I just never got there. But I would have went there, you know. So, I don't want to put a kind of dark pall over this, but there's stuff that's deep and dark, man. You do some ugly stuff, you know. So, I think it's vital that my sponsor went there with me, and I always go there with my guys. you know, because it needs to come out. And it's not a confession, but we need to know why we did that. You know, I think that's imperative. And some people say, you know, in a general way, well, I think that's leaving a little bit of room open for withholding some stuff. It wasn't a confession. And, you know, we talked about this last week, you know, if it's anything more than a couple lines, you know, a name or institution or one or two lines about what happened, and then these couple words over here, you know, you're writing a confession, not a four step. You know, it also talks in here about, you know, who are you going to do it with? And back in this day and age, more than likely, unless you were in Akron or Cleveland or New York, or in the early days when this book was written, you didn't have another drunk to help you through this. So they suggest some things. Clergy, you know, a minister, a doctor maybe, you know, they say it probably is a last resort after the doctors and psychologists says maybe one of your own family, but we cannot disclose anything that may harm them. Well, I could not have done my fist up with my mother, believe me. So we're fortunate today. You know, and that's the other thing about this. I got sober young. I sponsor younger guys more often than not, and that's just how they kind of come to me, you know. I mean, I end up sticking my hand out to these young guys, and you know, that makes it so much easier for the newcomer today to get through this. They don't have to go find these people. But I also, after we're done with this, we go back and I talk about it some during it, the historic context of the directions of the text. You know, I mean, we really, really have it much easier to not only be sponsored, but to sponsor today, because we didn't have to go out and look for somebody and be that desperate. You know, look for somebody in my town who is a drunk and try to carry this message to him after going through this book by myself. You know, so, you know, we don't have to do that today. There's one other thing I want to touch base on this, and that is about actually doing it if you can't find anybody. And this is more in a historic context, because now if you can't find somebody in AA to listen to your fist step, you don't want to do it. You know, it says, notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, it may be one is so situated there is no suitable person available. If that is so, this step may be postponed, but only, however, if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through with it at the first opportunity. You know, that's not so applicable today, but it certainly was back then. There may not have been somebody around. You know, when I got done with this, my sponsor and I talked about what we had done, and then we read this next section. You know, I had read this. But we read this, and it's on, you know, the last paragraph on 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we will walk a free man at last. That's pretty strong wording, you know. And I think, you know, at this point, when I was doing this, I had made that decision in 3, which I really, as you, the folks that heard me earlier when I talked about 2 and 3, I really resisted based on my own ego and false pride. Now, I want my parents to be right, their path, but I knew that not only was I'm going to be walking towards that awakening that's the result of the steps, but that there was going to be a shift. And I didn't know if it would be perceptible to me right then, but I knew there was going to be a shift. It goes on to say, is our work solid so far? Are there stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? and we tried to make mortar without sand. So I sat in that chapter and reread the steps, you know, in how it works, the first five, and then I reread the directions for them. Now, let's be straight. If you look at the directions for them first five steps, that probably took me all 15 minutes. You know, it didn't take a long time, and I sat there and kind of listened. Thought, okay, you know, I'm ready for this. You know, I'm ready to move on. Now, Kevin, could you give me a napkin, please? Oh, that would be great. Excuse me, I've started to get a bit of a cold. Actually, today at work, I was talking to a friend, and he said, well, you could always send Penny to pitch here for you. It'd be much more spiritual.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I said, or I could send you, you know, you would work too. So the next two steps I'm gonna read here in a minute, but I'm just going to tell you how I feel about this. You know, 6 and 7 are two paragraphs in our book. You know, there's books written about the two paragraphs. I'm going to share my experience right now. I you know, there may be some opinion to come out on this. It's neither good or bad. It just is. I try not to express my opinion up here, but I mean, they really don't even tell you how to take them. These are the two steps where there's really not clear-cut direction. There's a prayer in one of them, you know. For me, these next two steps were an acknowledgement of three and a higher power and a commitment to move forward, especially with 10 and 11. Because the things they're talking about here are things that I need to continue to look for. So it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness to be in as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted to be objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. Now, I just had a discussion with another acquaintance in the fellowship. He actually works where I do now. And he was sharing his experience with, he says, hey, one of my guys took a 6th step today. I'm like, well, didn't you do that after 5 that same day? And he's like, no, he's been on it for 2 or 3 months. And I'm like, well, okay, explain that to me, because I'm kind of starting to ask some questions. He said, well, you know, I wasn't entirely ready. So until I was entirely ready, I couldn't take the step. And I said, well, that's not how I see it. You know, I think we can all interpret this in different ways. I really do. But for me, it's like acknowledging that right column in 5, what it is that blocks me from God and other human beings, but also that power greater than myself needs to do this. Once again, acknowledging that my self-will that I learned about in 2, especially for me, and my thinking, which was based in fear, was the problem. I can't think my way out of not drinking. I cannot do that. So for me, it was an acknowledgement of this is the block and this is the path. That's me, okay? Everybody else does this thing in their own way. So I acknowledged that stuff sitting there. And then I went on and I read 7. When we are ready, we say something like this. My Creator, am I now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad? I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have completed step 7. I said that prayer. I got down on my knees and I recited that prayer. And it's S. I pray that you now remove me every single defect of character which stands in my way of usefulness to you and my fellows. And I was sincere about that, but my sponsor and I had talked about this before. He said, listen, if that stuff happened at that moment, once you got through 9, you really wouldn't have a need for 10 and 11, especially. You're going to take your self-will back. But again, this is an affirmation and a commitment to continue on, but also acknowledging once again that your focus and your spiritual path needs to be your higher power's will and not yours. And for me, that has worked. And that's how I lived it. I took this step, and I continue to live it in the last 3 steps. You know, we could debate this for hours, and I'm just not into that at 57 years old. I understand the path that I took, and I think it closely aligns with what they talk about in the book. So that's my experience as I did this, and I touched base with a little bit about the guys that I sponsor. I just, and it's interesting, Kevin had asked me to do this maybe a year ago, and I said, nah, I'm not there, you know? And he twisted a little bit, and I agreed to do it this time around because it coincided with trout season. Like, I can get this done, and then I can go fish. But I also ended up with a new guy. He's got 40 days today. Every morning he texts me what day he's been sober, and he gets up early like I do. He's actually not working now, but he still gets up early and does his 11-step practice. But we did his 5th step a week ago Sunday. So this is pretty fresh, you know, having done one with somebody recently. And that was the longest 5th step I ever did. It was like 5 hours. And it was pretty intense. Maybe more than 5 hours. I mean, Penny texted me at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and said, "You done yet?" And I said, "Not yet." And she says, "Boy, that's a long one." I'm like, yeah, I'll let you know. And it was like another hour. Because I usually have the guys come over to my place. We're very cooperative with each other when it's time to do step work with. And it's, you know, it just worked out. So we did his 5th step, and we kicked back and talked about it. And then we did what my sponsor did. We read what I just read to you. And I'm like, okay, where are you going to do it? And he told me, and I said, okay, do that, and after you're done, give yourself an hour or two, and I want you to call me. Because I just had a sense that some of that 5th step was just kind of gnawing at him a little bit. And he called me, and I said, "So how are you feeling about this?" He said, "Well, I'm feeling like bummed." He said, "You know, I did some ugly stuff." I'm like, "Well, we all did." He says, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" He says, "Well, I just did 6 and 7. I said, "Okay, you know what? Tomorrow start writing your list." He says, "Okay." He went to a meeting. He was fine. You know, it was kind of like fist up hangover for him. I mean, and it's pretty emotionally draining, I think, for both. Everyone I've done has bad. You know, if they're thorough. You know, so the other thing I would like to just share is that, you know, there was a guy I sponsored, and, you know, we got to 4 and he kept balking. And I talked a little bit about this when I did the 4 last week, but it ties into 5. And this guy's, he's about my age. He lives out of state now. And, he had graduated from Tech Memorial and went in the Navy for 8 years and got a boiler tender's license and all these certifications. But we're sitting at Perkins one night, and I'm kind of starting to push him. I'm like, "Dude, I'm about ready to give you the boot, man." And we were pretty good friends. I mean, we fished together. Because he was balking at this, and he finally broke down crying. He says, "I can barely read and write." And I said, "Well, how the hell did you get through life? Because you've got a lot, I mean, you know, a pretty big skill set." He says, "You know, I compensated in other ways, and I just got pushed through the system." I ended up writing his 4-step as he did his 5th step. It's basically what it ended up being. I spent the better part of a Saturday doing this. And then we did 6 and 7. You know, it was grueling, but he humbled himself to tell me that. And I'm like, I get it. There's a way around this, you know? And I figured it out pretty quickly, and we did it. And that was one of the most humbling experiences I've ever done sober, is to write somebody's four-step for them. Well, you know, and we went back over it too, but he was basically telling me the whole thing. I mean, we went down to columns like I write it, but when we got the last one, we briefly talked about it, then we went back through and went through it all. I don't know. I was put there for a reason at that moment when I met this guy, and I don't question it. You know, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. For me, this is done the way it's instructed, and I did it that way, and that's the way it works. If somebody else has done it differently, it doesn't mean you're right and I'm wrong, or I'm right and you're wrong. I think I understand what it says for us to do in the book, so that's the way I did it. You know, for me, the most important thing in five was, you know, who did I harm and what was the cause? You know, I needed to know what I was going to be. And, you know, that points out, again, there's those four things it talks about. The dishonesty, selfishness, fear, and resentment. That was me, but primarily fear and selfishness, you know. And it was a theme for me. It was a theme for this guy. You know, at the end, he says, boy, I'm a fearful, selfish SOB. And I says, well, yeah, you know, I was too, man. That's what drives us, man, because all these instincts that we have are threatened in our mind on some level, and we don't react well to it, man, and we make decisions based on that, and, you know, and it goes right back to, you know, the unmanageability and the sanity, and two, that they talk about, for me, is that thought. You know, all that bad stuff that happened when I decided that I could drink this time and it was going to be different was just a result of my unmanageable thought, that insane thought that I have, those glasses that are totally different colored than the world's, because nothing I saw was real when I was drinking. And what I perceived it to be was not the truth. And to see that again, okay, because this is like a spreadsheet at this point. This is data. You know, and that's what I love about the fourth and fifth step. It's not, there's no judgment in there. It's, you know, and there's no, I mean, you can feed into guilt and remorse if you choose to, but it's really about information. And Wilson presents it that way, too. You know, he's coming at it from a business person's point of view. We got to take stock, you know. Everything in this one, though, tends to be in the red, you know? There's no other way to put it. And what there's not in there, you know, is all you need to have an asset next to life. But no, that's not what we're looking for. I don't need to ask God to remove my selflessness. You know what I mean? I don't have any. That's the problem. I need to look at what's wrong. So that's what I did in mine. That's what I do with my guys. And that's really about all I have to talk about on this tonight.
Thank you, Eric. So that brings us to our question portion of the evening. Who has a question for Eric?
You have social hour early, man. I'm in trouble now.
Not really. Thanks for tonight.
You're welcome.
Just, when you're sponsoring people, have you ever run into a situation where when they're telling you about themselves, have you ever discovered something about yourself that you didn't know by talking to somebody you sponsored? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I know what you're asking, but I can't ever recall anything. But I've discovered stuff about myself in the 10th step that it wasn't. I had a resentment towards my mother that was not in my 4th step, and I didn't realize it until 6 months after she passed away, you know, and I did a written 10 step on that, but not not that I can remember. It's certainly not out of the realm of possibility. It's a good question. I can't remember. Well, you're welcome.
Who's next?
He likes that mic.
I can't believe how quiet these people are.
Thanks again, Eric. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You're talking about when you listen to somebody's fifth step. Have you ever had anybody do their fourth step and say, I don't want to share it with you, I want to do it with my priest?
No, that's not been my experience. But if that would happen, this is what I would suggest to them. That we do their fifth step and their sixth and seventh, and then if they wanted to again share that with their priest or minister in the context of a confession or an intimate conversation, then I would certainly say you should do that. But first you need to do it with an alcoholic who understands the nature of this exercise. Because there's well-intentioned clergy, but if they don't understand a relationship between the whom or what we harmed and the cause and how relevant that is later on, which may or may not be the case. I mean, you could certainly have a priest that was in recovery. The priest that was the retreat master where I did my fifth step was in recovery. And I know I certainly could have went to him, although I think my sponsor would have suggested the same thing to me. But no, I've never had that happen, but I would suggest to him what I just did. You know this. Going out to the women's prison, you know, for 10 years. So there were, over the years, a core group of women that kind of one sponsored another for a while. And that was one of the things that came up. And none of them was really open to discussing it with the chaplain. So we suggested, you know what, the one that's sponsoring the other one, hear the inventory. And they were, you know, I kind of know what it's like to have that street mentality. And you don't trust anybody or anything. And I remember Tony and I going through this more than once, and saying, you know what, at some point you got to take a leap of faith and have some trust in somebody. And they certainly weren't going to do it with whoever is the admin of the TC program, you know, because they're on the other side of the wall. So we said, you need to do this with, you know, that woman that's helping you through these steps once a week when you can get together. You know, or if you can do it via phone with your sponsor whenever you get phone time, but that would get kind of expensive. You don't get that much time on the phone, but we really pushed them towards, you know, you need to do that with these girls. But that was also for the women that were sponsored, because they felt like, you know, I'm in jail, and, you know, yeah, I worked through these steps, but I'm not worthy of this. We wanted them to know that they can do this anywhere. So that whether or not they did, one or two did, most of them weren't trusting. You know, so it was a tough situation, but there was nothing we could do about it. It's not like we could take their inventory, you know, sit there for an hour, for five straight weeks or whatever. I mean, we weren't comfortable doing that, and that's not really what her role was there. But, yeah, good question, though. Thanks.
Thanks, Eric. Yeah, that's very good. The other question that I had was, when you do a fifth step with somebody, you know, and you tell them, okay, take an hour, reflect on them, and see that you've done, you know, if you've done a thorough job on these previous steps. Have you had anybody come back to you and say, oh yeah, I forgot about this? And you mentioned the word trust, because a lot of us have trust issues, and you know, trusting another human being is really a giant leap of faith.
Oh yeah. Well, there's a twofold response to this. I've had guys It's one in particular. He's only like 19 when he came in, and we did his fist. We did his fourth and fifth step in about 4 hours, sitting on the deck of a cottage. He wrote on a Friday night. Actually, we finished about 1 a.m. We did his fifth step the following morning. But about 3 weeks later, he calls me up, freaking out. He's like, "Oh my God, I forgot about, you know." I'm like, "Dude, you forgot about it." I said, "Did you intentionally omit that?" He says, "No, I just forgot about this person from high school." I said, "Well, okay, inventory it. Tell it to me over the phone, we're good." I had one guy drink before he even got through nine. And when we went through the four step again, I had him write the whole thing because he lost his. I'm like, "Dude, you were doing your eighth and ninth. You did the eighth step list from it. You know, what'd you do with it?" But anyhow, well, he got loaded, so who knows what happened to him. But there were a couple things on there that he had, he admitted to me that weren't on the first one because I couldn't remember it. It wasn't like I did it 2 months later with him. It was a while before we went through it. So there was that one case that I can think of that there were things that he didn't tell me about the first time. And I gave the full disclaimer the first time, and these were things of that nature that he was just too ashamed to tell me. You know, and I can't, you know, as the kind and loving is I can be, tell somebody, you know, what we discuss is between you and me and God, and I take that literally, but you're not going to say anything I'm going to judge you about. But it, I think this person thought I was going to judge them. And I can't change how they're going to think, you know. So that's my...
They find that they're judging themselves.
Exactly.
Harder.
Right. Exactly, you know. I mean, you got to have a little faith and a little trust, you know. I mean, and you know, I had that in my sponsor. I mean, he was a pretty, and probably because he was so straight up with me about stuff. I mean, he told me what he would, how far he would go with me to do this, to help me through the steps. But he also told me what he wouldn't tolerate either, and he'd go find somebody else. I mean, you know, and he paraphrased that couple lines in the 12th step, but he said, you know, if you're willing and showing the action, you know, I'll go to the wall for you, but if you're not willing and doing some kind of action every day, after a while, I just say, well, you know what, maybe somebody else will. I may be depriving somebody else hearing the message, which we'll talk about when we review 12. In the other part of that is, you know what, we all are at that, my experience with myself and the people that were sober when I got here and I've watched get sober, I think a lot of people's definition of the jumping off point is different, but the people that I see that came in and did this deal, we're at their personal jumping off point. And for, you know, the day I went to treatment, the day I walked out of there, went to an AA meeting that night, I was at that jumping off point for me. And my sponsor sensed that, you know what, if this kid don't get it, he probably isn't going to, and he's not going to live too long. I mean, I was, you know, at 23, I was nearing the end if something didn't change. I mean, it was going to be in my hand or somebody else's, but it was going to happen. More than likely, it would have been my wife's hand, if not mine. I'm serious, man. It was pretty crazy at the end. So, you know, we all get at that point, whatever that's a personal space, you know. But we get there, and it's like, okay, I'm ready to do it, you know, willing to go to any lengths. You know, are you? Really? You know? So, there you have it. Thank you.